and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. If you're a consumer of Western media and its propaganda, it is likely you believe Israel, with of course American support, is remaking the Middle East. The fact is, Israel and Washington are far from winning. On this edition of the program, we explain why. Crosstalking Israel and the Middle East, I'm joined by my guest, Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. In Istanbul, we have Sami Al-Aran. He is director of the Center for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zion University. And in Amman, we cross to Daoud Kutaub. He is an award-winning Palestinian journalist and a columnist with Arab News and Al-Monitor. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mohammed, let me go to you first in Tehran. I've titled this program, Is Israel Winning? But before we consider that issue, what is the condition of the what is called the axis of resistance? I like the term, it's fine with me. What is the state of the resistance as we speak now?
I think it's doing very well. The Israeli regime, once upon a time, when they would invade, they would go all the way to the Suez Canal. Now they're stuck in Gaza. They can't take this dot on the map. And the resistance, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, they are continuing the fight. And then on the border in Lebanon, once upon a time in 1982, they went all the way to Beirut and captured the city. They got there in days. Now, after a month, they're stuck on the border. They haven't been able to take a single village. And, of course, in their exchange with Iran, I think the footage of Iranian missiles striking Israeli targets and the lack of such evidence in Iran shows that Iran has the upper hand. So I think the regime is doing very badly. Of course, Western media always says that the West is winning. They've been winning in Ukraine, as we all know, for the last 3 years. And in 2006, they were also reshaping the Middle East. And I think it was Condoleezza Rice who said that the war was the birth pangs of a new Middle East. So we've heard this before.
Okay, well, essentially the same question to you, Sami, but maybe slightly adjusted. I mean, we had Mohammed mentioning Iran's, I'm sorry, Israel's retaliation for retaliation. It looks like Iran is maintaining deterrence, something Israel and the United States have never been accustomed to in the region. Your thoughts, Sami?
Certainly. I mean, from the last episode, they planned three waves of attacks, but they couldn't get past the first one, which tells you that they encountered resistance, real resistance, where they were not able to go for the other two attacks. But killing tens of thousands of people, displacing millions and injuring hundreds of thousands and destroying civil life is not victory. It is war crime. These are genocidal maniacs who are taking place today in Gaza. And I think when you look at the objectives, the strategic objectives that Israel set for itself, you would see that they were not able even to pacify or neutralize the resistance in Gaza, let alone in other places such as Lebanon, Yemen, and Iran. So to answer your question, is Israel winning? I mean, we can consider it winning if it has achieved its strategic objectives. So far, it has failed miserably.
Well, let's go to Amman. I mean, I'm glad you, Sami, already brought it up, because over the last year, I've asked all of my guests, what is the strategy? What is the Israeli-American strategy? And the question I answer myself with the help of my guests is, it's terrorism. It's just wanton killing of civilians. That's the strategy. It's not going to get them what they want, though. Go ahead, Amman.
Well, it is a strategy, because their strategy is to weaken the resistance, and the resistance depends on the support of the public. So they're trying to kill the public so that the resistance will weaken. But the opposite has happened. The people are more supportive of the resistance, and the resistance has continued, even though, as we heard, you know, in 6 days they occupied West Bank, Gaza, Sinai, and the Golan, and now they've been a year in Gaza, and they've not accomplished their goals. They have not even been able to bring back their own hostages, even though they're all over Gaza. So, yes, their strategy is to kill civilians because they think the death of civilians, the destruction of property, which is a war crime, will force the public to go against their own resistors, and this has not happened.
Well, Mohammed, the very fact that we're talking about the resistance, it really answers a lot of questions. People are resisting tyranny. People are resisting aggression. They're on the winning side because they have much more resolve to resist. But the very definition of what they're doing shows the resistance has the resolve and moral fortitude to move forward. That's something the Israelis don't have.
You know, what your two esteemed guests were pointing to, the massacre and the genocide, and I think it's probably in the hundreds of thousands in Gaza, direct, indirect deaths. You have God knows how many under the rubble and people who've died of cancer and illness and all other issues that have come up over the year. That is a defeat. Obviously, these are war crimes, as pointed out. But I also think it's a defeat in the sense that the Israeli regime has undermined itself. The axis of resistance today is far more popular than it ever has been before, not just in the region, but beyond. Today, I see many young people across the world online saying things that I never thought would have I'd be hearing during my lifetime. In the past, I'd have to go to your very good show to hear good critique of the West. Now, so many young people have woken up to the reality of what's going on that I feel like I'm not really needed. They do it so well. And it's because the Israeli regime is carrying out these it's carrying out these atrocities. They've lost on the battlefield, as in whether it's in Yemen or Lebanon or in Gaza and the West Bank, But the biggest defeat has been the Holocaust itself. This genocide has demolished the legitimacy in the eyes of so many people who in the past complacently thought that it was a legitimate regime. Now people are looking, they're reading history, they're seeing the facts, and the regime has become a hated and despised colony in the eyes of people from far off from West Asia or North Africa. And I think that is ultimately what's going to destroy the regime more than the defeats that it's facing on the borders in Lebanon or in Gaza or in the Red Sea.
Well, Mohammed, you are the godfather of the conversation of resistance. You are very much needed, Sammy. You know, we've had in the last news cycle Israel outlying UNRWA. I mean, the irony of it all: Israel creates. The United Nations creates Israel, but Israel voids UNRWA. I mean, that is so easy for people to understand all over the world, and it is just appalling that a state that is a member of the United Nations would do something like that. I mean, it's amazing. Even American officials are very uncomfortable with it. Go ahead, Sammy.
Well, what we're witnessing today is a continuation of the Nakba, what Israel did in 1948, was to displace 80% of the Palestinians on the land that was occupied back in 1948. And today they have a problem. They have a quandary because on one hand, they claim to be a democratic state while they practice apartheid. And then you have over half the population today that are Palestinians, and they can't continue to claim to be democratic and at the same time say we're not an apartheid state. So their solution basically is to try to displace Palestinians and to invoke another Nakba. And that's why we're seeing, you know, these ethnic cleansing and war of extermination waged against the Palestinians. So what they try to do is to outlaw UNRWA, which has been in existence since 1949, since very early on in the Nakba days. And what they're trying to do is try to make it very difficult for the Palestinians to stay basically in the places where they are, whether in Gaza, West Bank, or even in other places in the diaspora. And they're doing it in plain sight with the United Nations. This is really a challenge, not just to the to the Palestinians. It's a challenge to the whole world. I mean, what are they going to do about it? Because they have now within their own means to kick Israel out of the General Assembly. They can do that because it's defying all UN resolutions. There have been at least 900 plus resolutions that haven't been implemented vis-a-vis the Palestinian issue, and countless others from the Security Council, of course, not to count 48 U.S. vetoes when it came to Israel.
Yeah, let's go to Aman. It's very interesting, the contempt that Israel has for the United Nations, but the United Nations is returning the favor. Sammy's absolutely right. I mean, now there is serious talk. I mean, over a year ago, it wasn't certain. Now it's, you know, should Israel be a member of the United Nations? It's something that's being mentioned now.
It's true. I mean, the United Nations toiled and fought and argued for about 2 years to accept Israel into the United Nations. And it finally agreed based on Israel committing to implementing the right of return resolution 194. So now the Israelis are turning around to the very issue that they promised to do, and that was they're accepted into the undergoing against UNRWA, which was established by the Americans, by the way, not by the rest of the world, to calm down the Palestinians so that they don't have to worry about them fighting to return. So the return has not happened. Israel has become a UN member and has violated its own promise. And now they're fighting against UNRWA for claims that when an investigative committee came to investigate, Israel refused to give them the data. They refused to give them any information. And yet now, all of a sudden, UNRWA is unacceptable. It's really ironic that the UN allows Israel to stay a member of the UN while Israel is making a law, a UN agency.
Well, it's getting to the point where the United Nations itself will be culpable for this genocide, and that's something very serious to think about. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Israel and the Middle East. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the future of Israel and the Middle East. Okay, Mohammed, up to about a year ago, the West liked to claim its moral and civilizational superiority. That's gone, completely void. It's gone. And I don't think, the West isn't coming to terms with it. The rest of us have, Mohammed.
Yes, it's truly stunning. I think that this stain will exist for the rest of my life. I don't think that the West will ever recover, at least for decades to come. What they've done to the people of Gaza, this genocide, this Holocaust, is unprecedented in world history. There have been other Holocausts, there have been genocides, but this was carried out in front of the eyes of the world. We've all been watching this happen day and night. We go to bed, and then right before we sleep, we see another active genocide. We wake up in the morning, we see slaughtered kids. That's been going on for well over a year, and we're constantly watching Western media outlets try to whitewash the regime. We see Western diplomats playing with language to somehow justify the regime. And this is something that people across the world have been watching. And in the global majority, or the global South, the people see their own history playing out in front of them, because they, in their history books at school, they read about the history of their country and colonization, and now they're seeing what happened to their countries in the past happen to another people in front of their eyes. And the Americans are never going to be able to say anything about Russia or China or North Korea or anyone in future. Neither are the Europeans, because what they've done is so horrific that everyone looks down at them. I know students a couple of years ago who took part in the riots in Iran, and the riots were basically about this belief that was created among young people, especially post-corona, that Iran is the problem. The West wants to be friends. They want to have normal relations, and we're the ones who have an obsession with conflict with the West. My own students, some of them who participated, three or four of them at least have come up to me and expressed remorse about, you know, they say, our views of the West have changed completely because these young people, and this is true across the world, those young elites, liberals who thought that the West was somehow, they were the good guys and they believed in women's rights and human rights and children and animals' rights and whatever rights, and now they see this happening. So people across the world, and people that I know, people across in this region, they've turned against the West, and young people in the West have turned against their regimes. Right now in Australia, I was just told this morning that you can go to prison for holding the Hezbollah flag at a protest, whereas the Israeli regime can carry out genocide in Gaza and it's business as usual.
Yeah, well, Sammy, if you criticize Zionism in the United States, that's equated with anti-Semitism. Any thinking person knows that's absurd. But you can lose your livelihood. You can lose your place at university. I mean, and this is a totalitarian bent. I mean, Sammy, one of the things that I've been observing, you know, there's been this perennial question of wag the dog. Is it Washington? Is it Tel Aviv? And I think I've kind of squared the circle. I mean, the U.S. wants hegemony, or it wants to deny the hegemony of others. It's looking at Russia and it's looking at China. A great deal of American policy towards Iran is also directed at Russia. It's not so overt, but it's very much there. But for the Americans, to maintain that hegemony or denying hegemony to others, genocide is acceptable. That's the bottom line. If that's what we have to do through a surrogate like Israel, then we find that acceptable. That is the message that is being sent to the world.
Very true. I mean, we've seen that the United States has been part and parcel of the problem. They have been partners in this, not only complicit, but they are providing the funds, the military assistance, the protection, the political cover, and so on and so forth. So it hasn't been done even behind closed doors. Yeah. It has been done right in the open. We also know that Zionism is losing ground. It's losing ground all over the world, including in the United States. I think the strategic losses that Israel has to endure because of what happened in the past year are tremendous, not only when it comes to the narrative or even the propaganda war that they're trying to do, and they are losing badly because people now are looking at all kinds of sources to find what the truth is about the Palestinian issue, or even on the legal side where they have to be in front of the world court and trying to defend a genocide that is indefensible. But we also see it on the political side. I don't think Zionism can survive this, whether it is one state, two state, which I think two state is gone. There's no two state solution. That train has left the station a long time ago. But if it is a one state, the Zionism is defeated. And eventually what's going to happen is that the whole world will insist on the dismantlement of the Zionist structures within Palestine, because no one is going to vouch, you know, save the United States, at least the political elites, to defend a genocidal government that is intent on ethnically cleanse half of the people in that land. That is undoable. They cannot do this. And I think what's going to happen is just in very few years, the whole world is going to insist on the dismantlement of the Zionist structures. And when that happens, then you have to have a whole new Middle East, which Israel now thinks that it can shape to its liking. What I think, that's not going to happen.
Daoud, in Amman, this, you know, Professor Morandi's already mentioned it. Condoleezza Rice famously said this is the remaking of the Middle East. This is folly right now. The Middle East is changing, but not changing in the direction that the United States and Israel and its other satellites, the UK, the European Union, et cetera, what they're expecting. And that's why I think this is going to be a very, very long conflict. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you've seen Ivy League schools in America, Harvard and Columbia and others, demonstrating for Palestine, holding vigils, some of them losing their education because of Palestine. This is a whole new generation of young people who are standing up for Palestine, and not because of Palestine, but because of justice, because of humanity.
Justice.
So I think we have a situation where young people who get their information from a different source, who get their information not from the legacy media, which the Zionists control, but from social media, from Instagram, from TikTok. And because they get the information from other sources, they really get to know the truth. And I think when they stand for Palestine, they're standing for their own humanity. And now these young people of Ivy League level, they'll be the leaders of the U.S. in the future and other parts of the world. So I do agree that the train has left, and I think the Israelis realize that their image is being tarnished. And that was their strength. That was the only thing that was keeping the world supporting Israel, is because they felt that this was a democracy in the Middle East, this was a human rights country that respected LGBTQT and so on. And all of a sudden now they're part of not only their allies, but they're complicit in more crimes and genocide that Israel is committing. Their weapons are being used to kill children. And that is what is driving them crazy, because they realize now they're no longer allies, but they're also members. They're also violators of international humanitarian law, and there are criminals. Now, what I would like to talk about is the media, because journalism is usually the, as they say, the truth is the first victim of war. But I think we've gone much farther than that, because Israel has denied this. Remember this word, not a single form. And the local Palestinian journalists are being killed and arrested. So the Israelis are trying to control the narrative. They're trying to control how the rest of the world sees what's happening. And they're lying about what's happening. They're calling resistors terrorists. And they're saying, I mean, the other day I laughed because the president of Israel tweeted that this is a war crime because Lebanon attacked Israeli soldiers as they were eating. Excuse me, if they're eating, you know, you attack them, that's a war crime. The war crime is when you attack a hospital, or when you kill journalists, or when you kill civilians,
It's a very good point that you bring up. Let me throw it back to Mohammed here. I mean, the number of journalists inside of Gaza and West Bank and now being targeted in Lebanon. I mean, this is another telling indication, is that they don't want. I mean, the IDF revels in its very perverse videos. I don't want to go into details on this program here, but they don't want other people to talk about it. They'd like to circulate it among themselves in a very weird, macabre way, but they don't want anyone on the outside to be able to report on what they see. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Well, they're horrible at propaganda. They used to be the best. I don't know what happened.
I don't either. Right now, I don't either.
It's amazing. They're just terrible. I mean, it's I don't get it. I don't understand how it works. I mean, one of these media outlets, I think it was Sky News, but I'm not 100% sure, the host was reading the names of the four soldiers that were just mentioned, that were eating, and she was reading their names and mourning their death. And then you have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people being slaughtered, women and children, just a day ago or so, in Lebanon and in Gaza. There were two horrific massacres in Baalbek and in Gaza. But is anyone reading out the names of these women and children who've been slaughtered? No, only the names of four soldiers who were about to go into southern Lebanon to kill people and to occupy the country. That is how bad their propaganda has become.
And it's become very obvious as well, is that, you know, we had, you know, 600 years of Western colonialism, imperialism, and it was a wretched history, and it's recorded, written, you know, and there's some images of it. But we have the same phenomenon on steroids, another Western colonial settler experiment in a non-Western part of the world. And it's now we can all see, it's already been mentioned on this program, so many countries in the world have their history of colonialism. And now we can see in real time exactly what that must have been for the entire global South. Sorry for the speech, gentlemen. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Istanbul, Amman, and of course in Tehran. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Rostock rules.